Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Are you looking for a better way to play player props or daily fantasy sports? Well, look no further than Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the leading over-under daily fantasy game. Why? Because it's so easy to use and win. You can make your picks in under 30 seconds and win up to 10 times your money in one day. Right now, we have a special offer for our viewers and listeners of A Hard to Tell podcast. All you got to do is sign up now and use the promo code BACKPACK. Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. That's right. They'll match your first deposit up to $100. So join the over 150,000 others who found a better way to play and download the Prize Picks app today. Hard to Tell podcast episode 215. Dexter Henry Bryan Fonseca here.
I'm laughing because of some off mic stuff. We'll continue.
I'll tell you, we can tell the people what it is. You know, I told Brian was a little disappointed because he looked at his phone and realized the Heat were losing. And I said, because y'all ain't that nice.
I got money on this game.
Yeah, you're going to bet on your people. I understand that. I understand you got to bet on your people. I understand that completely. I get it. You're going to bet on your people. It's all good. But we got a good episode for everybody that's listening this week. Look, if you've been paying attention to baseball, what's been going on, you've seen, well, baseball is not going to start on time this year. Yep. To talk to us about the MLB, I mean, there's a lot of people we can talk to. We will probably talk to a bunch of people about this. But we had to bring back somebody who has not been with us on the podcast in quite some time. The last time I saw this man, it was in studio. So you know that was a while ago.
Yeah.
He is the founder of The Pitcher List. And that is Nick. See, I almost messed it up, Nick. I was about to mess it up for a second. I was about to say it and it would be
wrong.
I used to say his name all the time.
It's Nick Pollock.
Yeah. I was going to say his name. You know, like they talked about a group of people in season two of The Wire. And I didn't want to do that. So I had to make sure I had it right. Nick, how are you, man?
And I mean, Nick, I'm all right. Maybe that was yes, I have. Of course.
Got an of course.
Say, all right. It's The Wire. It's The Wire. Yeah. What is happening? It's great to see you guys.
Honestly. Yes, man. It's good to see you too, man. Yeah, it's great. Really, really great to see you. Baseball is what you do. It's what you talk about a ton. But right now, baseball, you know, they're in a lockout. The players have been locked out. We don't have baseball. You are shaking your head, Nick. Can we get your emotional state around baseball being locked out right now?
This is the worst. This is it's the worst. I mean, look, I feel very lucky to be to have this whole thing surrounding like this thing I care about so much, that is baseball. It's this wonderful thing. It exists for as long as I've been around, and may way longer than that. And it's just so frustrating that, you know, I've built everything that I do around the sport, and that the ones that actually get to decide if there is baseball or not don't want there to be baseball. The owners of baseball are literally saying, you know what? We make more money if we don't have baseball played for about the first 25 games of the year, because we still get all of our TV money. We don't get as much revenue inside of stadiums, and we don't have to play players as much. So if we could just not let there be a baseball season for like the first 3 weeks or so, we'll make more money. So let's do that. And these are billionaires who are saving, you know, pennies to the hundreds of dollars for this. And they, not to mention, if they lose pennies to $100, who cares? They have $1 billion. It's unbelievably frustrating. It's maddening, and it's really hard not to be in a bad state about it. So it sucks. It sucks a lot.
Yeah, it's not good for anybody. Baseball, no. Baseball fans are pissed here. Could, like, I think there's a lot of people who maybe aren't super into baseball, but they kind of follow baseball, and they're kind of like, all right, what's going on here? Is, you know, I sometimes think we trivialize it, right, to the billionaires versus the millionaires, and that's kind of trivial instead of looking at it as an actual labor issue that I think a lot of people can actually relate to. Yeah. If you think about it, could you talk and let people know what's actually going on here? For people who don't know, what are they actually disputing here? What is it the players want? We know for the owners, it's greed. But what is actually being disputed here? Nick, can you talk?
Absolutely. So first of all, I mean, even the millionaires to billionaires thing, it's the same as like thousandaires to millionaires, right? And then you can get really real understanding, like, wait a second, there is such a large gap between these people. At the heart of what's going on is the most valuable thing in baseball are young players. Why is that? Because they are not being paid millions and millions of dollars. They haven't entered free agency. They're also just generally a higher quality of player. They haven't had as many injuries. Steroids are not a thing anymore, or at least they aren't as major of a thing. People are still getting suspended, of course. But back in the late 90s, early 2000s or so, the peak player performance was around 28 years old. That has fallen far back to about 25 or so. And what that means is those that do most or are best for teams are the ones that are not getting paid a lot of money. They're the ones that are on team control at minimum salaries. And it can be really tough for a lot of players to actually get their proper payday. And also means that teams are benefited by losing and shedding payroll and instead trying to gather as many of these young players as possible. And that's really an issue. I mean, there should be no way that in the first place in this, or, you know, in everything that is this game of baseball, there should be no incentivization for being bad. And you see teams like the Rays, and we celebrate from the outside, like, oh man, look at this amazing team they can put together on such a cheap payroll. We shouldn't be celebrating that, because that means that they essentially found the loopholes in the system to underpay their players. They should be paid more if they're doing really well. It just makes so much sense, right? So at the core of what's going on here, and you hear a lot about, like, say, Max Scherzer pulling up in a Porsche and all of that stuff. And what's really happening is that Max Scherzer is not vying for himself. What he's trying to do is he's trying to say, look, the minimum salaries that all these players get should be higher, right? You guys should be paying more for them. And then generally how free agency works is you have team control for either 6 or 7 years. There's some rules about that. I won't get into the weeds about it. It can be very confusing, all of that. But in its essence, you have 3 years of team control under minimum salary. And then you have it in 3 years of arbitration, where based on the player performance that year, either the teams can sign a contract that says, yeah, you were worth this amount for that season, or they can go to an actual arbiter that says, based on very basic stats, like how many saves you got or how many RBIs you had, which we all know is not actually the way to determine if a player is good or not anymore.
Right.
But based on that is how much they get paid, and that's that. And you have situations like Jacob deGrom, where if a guy comes up at 27, 28, because he's been in the minors for so long, he's under team control for 6, 7 years. So when he would get his payday, would actually be like 34, 35, and no one wants to pay for that. Sure, we have like Juan Soto is expected to get like $400 to $500 million because he's going to be incredibly young at that time. But for the heavy majority of players, some of them don't even really see more than 3 years in the majors at all, let alone survive through all the team control to be a free agent, and that is worth anything. So what's going on here is that Max Scherzer is saying, look, those younger players need to be paid more. And we got to stop having these luxury tax, the collective bargaining tax, which essentially says at a certain point, owners are charged extra. They have a tax if you go over the luxury threshold. And essentially that says acts like a salary cap, which is bad for players. That means teams pay less money.
And can I say something on that? Because we do got to get that out the game. Okay,
let's go.
You have this. You said it acts as sort of a salary cap. Yes, but then you don't have a floor, right? So then if people don't want to spend the money, they don't have to spend the money. And you make a great point, Nick, in that we have people lauding the Tampa Bay Rays. Why are we lauding people for not trying to put the best product on the field or trying to do it cheaply?
Yeah, like it's we're thinking about the wrong way. I mean, we allow them because it's like, oh, the gamesmanship, right? If I am in control of a team, my goal is to spend the least amount of money. Like, oh, I only have $60 million to spend, so can I make the best team? And the Rays are really good at that, right? But that really shouldn't be what we praise, you know? We should be praising teams. You know, we think about it all the time outside of baseball and just normal society. Like, yes, people should be paid what they're worth. And this is no exception to that. There are also little things like a lot of teams just not signing anybody. And I agree, there should be a salary floor in many, many ways. It just makes way too much sense. These teams are making tons and tons of money. Like, yes, make them spend it toward the players. That's obviously what they want. I don't think we're going to see something like that, but at the very least, there are certain things like the qualifying offer, if you're not familiar with that. Essentially, the average of all free agency contracts, they say that is a number, so that's like $18 million. Any team that has a player that's going to free agency finally after team control says they can offer him that qualifying offer. Then that player, it's a one-year deal, can say, yes, I'll accept it. And if they say no, then that team is given a compensation draft pick. So in many ways, teams are getting compensated for not spending money again. Not to mention the team that needs to also where that pick comes from is from the team that signs the players. So let's say I offer you the qualifying offer. You say no, go sign with the Yankees. The Yankees now need to give me a draft pick. That means the Yankees have a disincentivization to not sign you.
Right.
And that's a problem. So there are these little elements to it that are going into this. But the things you're seeing are CBT. Everyone, you know, the players want that to be raised. Where does that cap happen? Okay. How much money are they getting in the pre-arbitration? That is mid-league minimum and all that kind of stuff. We want that to raise. And one of the funniest thing to me is like, this is nothing. Teams have to pay like $3 million more dollars a year. That's really all the players are asking. Maybe $5 million. That's it. They're not saying you have to spend $50 million more. It's like $5 million.
And the owners are like, nah, we're not going to do that.
And they're saying, oh, how dare the players do this to us? They're the ones. We almost had a deal on Monday. No, you didn't. You never did. In fact, the owners at the 11th hour, in the final one, they said, take it or leave it. They tried to add in new things at the very end in fine print, essentially.
Of course.
That they had never discussed before. As if the players were some dumb jocks or something, like it's. So
well, that's insulting. That's part of the thing. And Brian, I feel like if you were sitting there, I want you to touch on this, Brian. They're disrespecting the players out here. They're acting like the players they can't fight for this. They don't think they'll fight for this. But go ahead, Brian. Go.
Well, what this really is just a microcosm of like what's going on in America, just as a country. Like I like that Nick also mentioned this being like millionaires versus thousandaires, just on a fundamental level, because it's not dissimilar to labor disputes that are going on at different companies, you know, throughout the country, right? Like we're talking about just labor shortages because people are not willing to do certain things. I think baseball being an extension of that and having the players really want to stand on their own too and not and actually putting their money where their mouth is, so to speak, and being like, look, we're not going to play these games if you're not going to treat us the way we're meant to be treated or the way we should be treated. Like, I think a lot of other people just in general are making that decision. And that's why I think this is so relatable. I also wanted to ask Nick, because as the founder of PitcherList.com, you kind of need baseball games to be functioning now, right?
Like,
And I think that this also just impacts, it's not even just businesses that are built around baseball, because I'm thinking of like the minor league players who already got boned in 2020 because there was no minor leagues during the entire pandemic. A lot of guys had to go to Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Venezuela to play in winter leagues and such. Other guys went to Korea that we saw. Like we saw like former
Dan Straley coming back this year finally from KBO. Yeah.
From the KBO. Like they were games on ESPN because we didn't have any games and there were major league players or ex-major league players going out there to play. But for you, just from a business perspective, like, okay, so how does this work now? Because I believe this is the first baseball lockout you've had to deal with since pitcher lists existed. So
I mean, we had something similar obviously with quarantine in 2020.
Yeah, that's true.
And I was actually really fortunate in that sense where I was ready to start investing in a lot of things that year, and I hadn't yet. I wanted kind of to have a smooth opening day and then make it work, and then the opening day didn't happen. So we were able to get through that. I started an event called PitchCon that year as a way to help us survive, essentially. And then I felt bad about asking for so much money without giving to charity. So we gave half of it to Feeding America, which was a really fun event. And you can go watch all of it on YouTube. And we've done it for 3 straight years now, where it's just industry people talking for 4 straight days. But stuff like that we can do. Now it's a little weird because I made a really cool website to pat myself on the back. It is really amazing. And I love it. And I can't wait when there's normal baseball for it to really thrive and be everything that everybody wants. It's just that, 50% of traffic is down. It's down 50%. And it's not just me. Like, Fangraphs just put out a whole thing today about, this is bad. They're down 50% in traffic as well in February and in March. And, I got to figure it out. I'm lucky in the sense that I don't have, we don't have any investors, don't have any corporate board or anything. We don't have any debt that we are forced to pay out and stuff. I have the overhead of the site. And you just kind of have to be creative and figure it out and just get through it somehow. I feel so strongly that when baseball returns, everything is going to be great. It's going to be fine. Believe in the product that you have, all of that. But yeah, it hurts. And it's even hurts more that the owners think that this kind of like as a, they don't understand the impact of what they're doing.
They don't.
And if there's anyone that can be charitable, don't you think it should be billionaires?
Right. But that's the problem.
It's unbelievable. But that's not how they became billionaires. Why should they have to do it? Because they're billionaires. The problem. That's why. No one should have $1 billion.
But that's also the problem, like, nationwide, again, is because inflation is crazy right now. Right. But billionaires have made more money than they ever have since the pandemic started. So who's getting fucked in all of that? It's the working class people. So in this situation here, it's the baseball players. It's the labor. Specifically, the baseball players that, as you mentioned, Max Scherzer's fighting for, guys fighting for minimum contracts, trying to loosen up the arbitration shit that doesn't make a lot of sense when Jeff McNeil is somebody who, because he came out of college and didn't make it to the majors for 4 years, is not going to see free agency till he's like 32, 33 years old.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
It's messed up. And crazy. That's a huge problem with this. And something that the players were pushing for was having an age limit or something around, either you hit this age or this amount of years to prevent issues like that, which we haven't really heard about in all of these negotiations anymore.
No, that you haven't heard about it at all.
Here's the thing. Yeah. Compare it to another sport real quick, like basketball, for example, where comparatively, like Major League Baseball, if you want, you can come out early. Now, in baseball, you can come out straight out of high school or you have to go for college for 3 years, which is in itself a dumb rule. But essentially, like in the NBA, if you come out, you're a one and done or a two and done, like you can hit free agency at 23, 24, 25 years old. Even if you're a 4 year player, but went undrafted, you can still hit free agency 24, 25 years old. Like, and that's where you want to do it because you're entering your peak. You probably establish yourself a little bit to that point. But in baseball, a lot of times when you're 25, 26, you're either starting arbitration, still on a rookie scale contract. You might not even be in the majors. And in most cases, you're probably not. Because most guys don't even make it to the major leagues. And that's the other part about all of this. You're talking about a lot of baseball players, and there are a lot of minor leaguers who they've been – there have been guys who have been sharing their stories on Twitter. Like, hey, I've been in the minor leagues. I played with Trenton and played in this team in Ohio Valley, and I've been doing this for 7 years, and this is my story, and this is why people should – and I've just seen minor league players come out and sharing, like, how this affects them. And those are guys that are making salaries compared to like, what regular you and your family might make because like they're just regular people who get paid to play baseball, et cetera, et cetera. And they're probably a lot of them probably don't even get it to the majors or they have to be so persistent where they can't get to the majors until later on just because that's how the system works or whatever the case may be. Like there's been more than one Chris Coast who didn't make it to the majors till he was like 33 years old.
It's wild, unfortunately this whole negotiation doesn't involve the minors. It's a MLB Players Association. They can't speak for it. Yeah. I mean, I've shared my feelings so many times. I think everybody obviously agrees, like, hey, you are trying, like, I hate in any way mentioning humans as an investment or anything like that, but same. That's effectively like, you know, why don't you want these players to be as great as they can be? If you're trying to build a winning ball club or so, you want to say, cool, let's give you all the tools possible to be that. And that would mean that instead of getting, you know, a secondary job as an Uber driver, to actually be at the athletics facility and improving. And it's such an easy thing, again, for organizations to just throw $5 million. That's it. All of a sudden, you're going to have at least one player who is incredible come out of that. You know, I mean, it blows my mind that there needs to be all of this fighting and arguing and protesting for minor leaguers to get paid more. Like, how is that a thing? I don't understand. Sadly, that has nothing to do with the CBA here. It is something we're going to be talking about after this.
Yep.
But right now, it can't be addressed inside of it.
And since we were talking about, Nick, about the fact of you operating your startup pitcher list, you know, amid this MLB lockout, I have a very important question. If you saw Rob Manfred out in these streets, what would you say to him? What would you have to say to Rob Manfred, who's messing up your money and the money of other people? Would you have to say? What would you have to say to that man?
This is the funniest thing to me. I'm sorry. I think a lot of people give Manfred too much credit, because at the end of the day, he's just a puppet for the owners. It's not Manfred making these decisions. It's Manfred who is hired by the owners to represent MLB. I imagine in his heart somewhere, Manfred doesn't like the thing that he's doing, but this is what he does. This is his job. This is what he's supposed to do, you know? And it's not this evil man that is just doing this. I wouldn't have anything to say to Manfred. I would just be, you know, I would just say, man, this sucks. You know, and it's not a hunk of metal. And like, here's the thing too, like the hunk of metal quote, I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about, is essentially the Astros, you know, were not penalized at all, really, when it came to cheating for the 2017 World Series. And the reason, I believe the reason for that is because all the owners knew that their teams were doing stuff too. Mm-hmm. And if he came out and said something more, he needed to downplay this so that essentially, you know, this all the owners felt okay, and then like the Astros owner was like, hey, like all of us do this, like you can't possibly do this, right? And Manfred's like, all right, cool, I represent all of us, I'll make sure this is taken care of, I'll call like a hunk of metal or something, you know, like that's what happened.
He just took the pressure off them. So I want to ask you this too, right? Because you said that, look, the owners are looking at this like, hey, we could ride this out for a little bit. We can miss a couple weeks of the season. We'll still make money.
Well, they'll make more money.
Make more money. Right. You talked about the TV deals and all this stuff. Do you think the players, Nick, are really down for this? Are they really in this for the long fight? Do you think they're in this to say, look, we're going to fight on this. We're not letting up on this. We're not any chumps here in the negotiating room.
The most conflicting thing. Because I so heavily believe in what the players are standing for. The sad part is that it means I get affected by it. And the more that the players hold out, the worse I do. But that's a selfish thought, though. I mean, what the players are doing is the right thing. Right. And I stand with what they're doing. And as long as they need to do to get what they need, then go and do it. It just sucks. And, you know, I'm proud of them for this. We've made fun of Tony Clark so much over the years for the bad CBAs that they've had before and how much he just rolled over for the owners. I will say this, he went around in the previous one and asked people what they wanted. And it was less of money stuff, but it was more of amenities and more of like more off days, just better clubhouses, that kind of stuff. Not, hey, our salaries are too low kind of thing. So the owner's like, yeah, sure. All right, fine. We'll do all of that. It's not fun going through this at the moment. I stand with the players. They're in for the long haul, though, and I gotta say, what they're asking is so unbelievably fair that once the owners are like 3 weeks in, they'll be like, all right, we'll give you some of this, and that's that. They'll be done.
So if we're making predictions, Nick,
May 1st,
okay, because that I've heard similar Like, I've sort of heard, like, that, you know, they can lose April and, like, both sides would be okay with that. I think the owners would be okay with never playing baseball again at this rate.
No, okay. No, they want to make some money. They make a lot of money. They want their TV deals. They want their 14-team playoffs, you know. April 28th, to give you an exact date, is what I would say. So four weeks of the season lost.
So you think we will see baseball. We'll get to hold that on that, Brian. We'll get to that in 1 second.
Backpack Broadcasting continues to bring you the best original sports content, but now you can get more of the content you love. For as little as $3 a month, you can get access to bonus content, including behind-the-scenes footage and interviews from the Sports Walk, Sideline Stories, or the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. All this exclusive content comes via Patreon. There are tiered levels of patronage, and each Backpack Broadcasting patron receives exclusive perks. Your support helps Backpack Broadcasting create more of the original content that you love. Visit Backpack Broadcasting's Patreon page and become a patron today.
Just to be clear with you, you think, one, we will see Major League Baseball in 2022. We think we possibly may see it before May.
I mean, April 28th is the reason, is what I'm saying, because then the 25 games are up, essentially, for the owners. That's also a Thursday, which is what opening day was supposed to be. It just makes more sense. Like I said, May 1st, but that's really a Sunday, and that doesn't quite line up, you know? So the 28th, maybe it's May 2nd, that Monday or something, but right around then is when I expect baseball to return.
Okay, I guess we will see some baseball at some point. Okay, one of these sticking points, Brian was going to bring this up.
I'm doing it right now. I can do it right now. Listen,
14-team playoff. Tell us what you think, Brian.
Like, yo, this 14, like, here's the thing. I do think, Nick, we may have talked about the playoffs before, but I do think that there's a world where you could convince me 12 is good because there's 30 in a league, but it would kind of have to be like in a way that football was, where it's 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5, and then 1 and 2 get the bye. But I wouldn't want it to be all these single games. And I guess that's really my issue here, right? So if and when we do see baseball again, how do you feel about this 14-team playoff? Because I think that the way to do it in a way that's true to regular season baseball would be to have series, I don't know how you would say that, right?
Multiple series, as opposed to,
you know, just single game playoffs. I don't like 162 games, or I don't know how many games we're going to get this year, being boiled down to one game. I don't really love that because the sport is, you know, 3-game series, 4-game series, 3-game series, et cetera, et cetera.
All right.
Or how about we actually reduce the season, which needs to be done.
But that's the thing that I think we should do. What? But the owners don't want to do that.
Oh, yeah, Nick.
Just to 140.
Don't you dare take away my game.
Oh, no, yeah. No. But, Nick, you get more playoff games.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Wait. Okay.
Yes. Let's go back.
Okay. First of all.
Clear objects.
The Blue Jays last year were a 91-win team, did not make the playoffs because they were out by one game. And you're telling me 162 is too many? We needed more to get that separation. I think that is the best showcase that baseball needs that many games to get the proper separation over time. Now, I'm going to say this about the playoffs. Do you guys remember 2020 and what they did then? Do you remember
16 teams, right?
Yeah. 16 teams. And guess what?
Marlins
made the playoffs. They were a winning ball club and they had a fantastic series against the Cubs. It was awesome. I had a great time. That was a really wonderful October. And guess what? The two teams in the end were the Rays, the best team in the AL, against the Dodgers, the best team in the NL. And the Dodgers won. And it felt like a normal result as we all expected. This is how I feel about the playoffs. It is super fun. And if you are a winning ball club, I think you belong in the playoffs. That's actually the playoff system that I would do. I would say if you are above 500, not at 500, if you make it above 500 through this 162-game grind, you belong in the playoffs. Now, what we can do is then award exactly what you're saying. Those that win the division or have higher records benefits, ways of doing that, or buys. You can make it so that you do a three-game series where the winning squad needs to get one versus the lower record needs to win two. Whatever you want it to be, there are ways to even it out. But having more playoff games are innately not bad. It's just about how you structure it. And well, yeah, you're, and you're complaining also about the one-game playoff and you're out. Well, then have a better regular season. Like, I'm fine. Like, either we go
I'm fine with that.
Injuries, no, Nick.
You can have who cares? If you have a four-game playoff, right, four teams in the playoffs, right?
Right.
And you want to add more teams, fine. Make those guys deserve, need to do it in one game to get their chance. They should have been a better team in the regular season. That means we're not deflating what you did for 6 months. And yes, you can say things about, like, the second half, you find your groove, you get a rotation, you're made for the playoffs. I have a lot of ideas for that. As far as I would never I have an off day. Zero off days. We don't have off
zero off days.
Only between series. We only like inside of a series. We do this in season all the time. Why all of a sudden do we not do that for the playoffs?
Oh, sorry.
Zero off days in the playoffs.
Series. Yeah, I thought you meant during the regular season. I was like, what?
But no, what I hate is like teams can roll with like three man rotations at times and then roll through it. Like, no, you if it's a seven game series, you got to go through all five or do a 3 day rest with your number one guy.
I'm not opposed to that.
That is a big issue that I've seen in a lot of playoff series is that you have these teams that have three good aces. Look at the Nationals from 2019. It was Corbin, Strasburg, and Scherzer who rolled through that, and that changes everything. Like, wait, but that's not a proper 100 win team. That's more like an 85 to 90 team because their 4 and 5 are not very good. And I want that represented. There are ways to figure this out. Innately, having a 14 team playoff isn't the problem. If anything, I love that. I love that there are more teams in. That means more teams are going to be competitive. That means at the trade deadline, instead of everybody selling, it's for like the four people that are trying to go against each other, and then Dodgers always win and get everything. We're going to actually have a lot of teams that want to be in it and going to have a lot more dealings. You're going to have a lot more teams that feel like, oh, no, we're just one big signing away. I love this. I think it's a great idea. And look, if that's what the owners want, more games for more playoffs so that they make more money so that all the players can be paid. Awesome. That's a solution. I think that's great.
I'm fine with the expanding the playoffs with more teams. And people will say, oh, it's diluted. You almost have half the teams getting
great. Basketball look, does it. You guys do okay.
Yeah, and they're doing fine.
Basketball actually is 2/3 of the league now because of the play-in.
Right.
So, like, it's a 20 in?
20.
Well, yeah, it's not 20 in. It's 16 in, but there's 20 teams actually complete in some sort of playoff thing, if you want to call it that.
20 teams
they're not actually in.
So, 7 but, plays 10, 8 plays 9 or something?
No, it should
seven,
be that way. So, here,
7 plays 8.
7 plays 8, and the winner gets the 7th seed, and then the loser of that game
plays the winner of 9 or 10,
and then they get the 8th seed.
You can be creative. This is what I'm talking about. You can do exactly that for this, right? Like, it's fine. You're not making it worse for those that have a better regular season.
This is the only thing I was going
to say. Exactly what it should be.
The only thing I was going to say is I'm with Nick on pretty much all of that. My thing is, I don't even think baseball, I think baseball is too fucking long. Like, we need to, We need to cut some of the games down. You know what I love? I love second half of the season. I love August on, late July on. I love it. I don't care about a lot of shit going away, which actually is funny. This year, I might like that it starts in May. I don't like it for you. I'm saying I don't like it for you. We know that you're suffering, but here's my one concern with the four. This is in all seriousness, my one concern with the 14 playoff is like, okay, is this gonna make the playoffs longer? Are we playing games in fucking November now in the cold? What are we doing here?
Okay. So as I was talking about, if you have no off days inside of a series, you also can compress it. You can also make it with 14 teams. You can do one game playoffs. You can do three game series. Whatever you want to do. You could do that really effectively. We've had games in November for like a decade now. Like, that's not a new thing, and that's fine. Now, I'm going to say this. If you're thinking like it's too long, is it too long of a season? Are the games too long individually for you?
I think it's too long of a season. I'd like to see
wrong with that? What's wrong with more of a good thing?
Here's the thing. And especially for what you do at Pitcherless, because I'm very intrigued to know this, right? If we let's say we shorten the season to Let's say we take 12 games off. Okay. Yeah. Okay. No, 150 games. 12
it's only,
games.
It's only right? 12, Nick.
That gets like 12 games. That's more rest during the regular season. That's going to help pitchers, pitcher list. Yeah. Help
oh, no, no,
help.
No, 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 no.
It's not
no,
going to help no. pitcher performance.
No, no, but what the ones that hurt then are the number five starters. And the number five starters are my favorite thing about the game, because those are the guys that are coming up. They're getting their first chances, the ones that you don't really expect anything from. But all of a sudden, this wonderful guy is just destroying it. Luis Gil for the Yankees has a wonderful stretch of four games. And that's what everybody is talking about all of a sudden. Nestor Cortez doing the same thing, right? Those are the number five starters. The more that you spread it out like this, now you're getting four starters per team. You're making it more top heavy in this way. You're not getting the beauty of the game. And to me, the best part of the game, the beauty of the game, is that you have one task as a pitcher. One thing you have to do. You have this imaginary box and you have to throw a ball into it. And every single one of these guys has a different way of doing it with a different approach, different fastball that moves this way, a slider that goes that way. And waits. And the more that we see variety of this, who are talented, who have a lot of ability, rarely are actually like they're just bad pitchers out there. Trust me, I've sat through games where I'm just like, oh God, I do not want to watch a single second of this. I understand it. But for the most
Mets
part,
fans, Dexter and I have also. Yes. So
I had to go through a game of Clayton Richards against Corey Oswalt, who I call the False King, and that was one game I was at field level, and it was like, why did I get it for this game? But the point of the matter is, when you get less baseball in that way, more off days and spread out, those are the guys that actually hurt. And sure, you can say from fans, yes, I want more games of being Cole or Scherzer or DeGrom, whatever. But for me, the ones that are following it so religiously, that is the exciting part. That is the stuff that gets me going. Is I cannot wait for another start of this.
You know what?
This guy to go and
I did not.
Let me back Nick up here.
I did not think anybody was going to be excited about fifth starters here.
No, but let me back Nick up here because I think this world is too fucking centered on stars.
Yes.
Okay. I think that we need to appreciate the role players. And the reason why is because most of you motherfuckers out there are role players, okay? We need to appreciate the people we could actually relate to instead of just being the star-hungry, star-horny time that we're in right now.
Wow, okay.
As people,
that wasn't the phrase
society.
I was expecting.
Listen, I'm tired of it because people only focus on stars when it comes to shit. I'm watching commercials and they're not hyping up Warriors versus Lakers. They're hyping up Steph versus LeBron. What if I want to see Jordan Poole or Juan Toscano-Anderson or Austin fucking Reeves? Like, what's the problem with that? I don't care about the stars as much as other people. Give me some good fucking role players
baseball,
with some good backstory and all
exactly.
this
shit. Baseball is all about the storylines, man.
Yes.
It's about the guy, you know, D. Gordon hitting that home run, you know? Like, it's all this stuff that's just... Patrick Wisdom being good last year. Do you even know who that is? You probably don't, but if you're a Cubs fan, you absolutely do. You know, it's crazy stuff like that. And the more and more you propel it as Brian is saying, where it's just the cream of the crop and that's it. Nah, that then just comes sterile.
That doesn't help the game.
There's no drama. There's no ebb and flow.
I'm just saying.
Give me Tristan McKinney. Nick.
I'm just saying. What both of you are saying can absolutely be true, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I think there's merit to what you're saying. I'm just saying if we shave off 12 games, does that kill that?
Don't do it. Yes.
It doesn't kill it. I don't buy that. I don't buy that it kills it at all.
You need more time for everything to brew and to settle and do
we?
Digest.
Do we?
Look, man.
It was 12 games less. It was, sorry, 12 fewer games in the year. You wouldn't have the Mets falling apart for two straight seasons. Okay?
I don't
they
would
have made the playoffs in both years.
You,
right?
You know what? You know what, Nick? You know what, Nick? Screw you, one, for bringing that up. You know what?
15 years ago, the wound still has to heal.
And you know what? I was there for both of the final games. I was there for both of them. Yes, you know what, Nick?
You should appreciate this more than anyone, then.
I maybe should, but maybe I was trying to forget about that pain. I wasn't trying to think about it anymore. All right, Nick.
Was Levon Hernandez a fifth starter in 1997?
No,
he came over originally from Cuba.
When he first came over, I mean, oh, when he first came over? Anything. I mean, they had a couple. No, but I don't think he. Maybe when he first came over. I mean, everybody starts at the bottom.
Right? Oh, Brian, you too. You loving the fifth starter here? Just loving the fifth starter.
Yes. But you need in a rotation now. You have six on some in some instances.
So oh yeah, that's like the Mariners.
Listen, Angels, every time I stress out about the Mets offseason, part of that is who the fuck is going to be the fifth starter because they never nail it. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah. They but hold on. Right. Hold on. You're right. They never get it right. And that's probably why I don't care about the fifth starter. Because always mess it up.
Because you can find a good one. They just haven't done it yet. And usually,
maybe it's Tyler McGill.
And here's the thing. For me,
he was solid. Yeah,
I like when David Peterson for a stretch.
For a stretch.
It is a stretch. We got to see more. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. The fifth starter usually is generally exciting when it's either a veteran who's still trying to prove that they still have it, or a young guy that you're excited about who has to start at five because, you know, seniority, whatever the case may be. Like, that's exciting to me. So that stuff does matter.
Yeah.
I will have to say, it kind of just popped in my mind who my maybe most recent favorite Mets fifth starter was. It just really came to me. Come on, man. Bartolo Colon, man. Yeah. When Bartolo Colon was out there throwing... Listen, man, I you know what, Nick? I was tuning in for that Bartolo Colon.
Were you there when Bartolo Colon effectively ended James Shields' career?
I was not. I was watching.
One of the greatest calls in baseball history, Gary Cohen.
I was watching. Okay, so you're down for the 14 team playoff. Mm-hmm.
Nick, could I propose to you, what if you had in the playoffs, instead of single game playoffs, would you prefer like 3-game series, then 5-game series, and then the World Series would be 7-game series?
The ALCS and NLCS have to be 7.
Three, 7, and 7?
Right now it's 5, 7, and 7. If I would honestly suggest that you can probably fit in a 3-game before the 5. So I would go 3-5-7.
I wouldn't
seven.
Mind that.
Maybe even like one play-in and then 3-5-7-7.
Play-in in baseball is a little tough. Like, I don't even love it in basketball, but I get it, right? And for basketball, I think it's a little bit different because in basketball, like, the separation amongst those teams usually isn't a lot. Now, this year is going to be interesting because we're going to actually see some teams that people think have high ceilings, like the Brooklyn Nets, in one of those games.
I haven't thought about the Brooklyn Nets in a very long time, and I live 20 minutes from the Barclays Center. So
good for you. Like, seriously, good for you. You're better
off. As soon as Nick said that, I said Brian's going to love that comment.
You're better off. But here's the thing, though, right? Like, I will say this, though. When I have a one-game playoff in baseball, when I have a one-game playoff in basketball, as we saw last year, if you give me a one-game...
Oh, I'm all into that.
Playoffs is a one-game playoff, so I'm going to watch it.
I didn't love, as a Met fan,
our one-game playoff in 2016, Jerry's Familia. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
Like, I didn't love that one.
Those wild card games are super exciting, by the way. They're really, really fun to watch. Absolutely. And I think it's a really just amazing night overall baseball. We had some incredible ones like the Royals and the Athletics. You had Travis Ishikawa's home run as a Giant. I mean, there's so many amazing moments.
Last year, the Red Sox.
I mean, yeah, well, yeah. but no. The one thing I wanted to even suggest, you could do some crazy awesome ideas. You could have like a 4-team or 3-team round robin in like Omaha or something, like a neutral site. And like for 2 days or something like that. And you have these, like, some teams have to play a doubleheader that day or whatever it is. You can actually do some fun things for this to speed it along, you know?
Yeah, but see, I like the round robin idea. I like the idea, but we all have to acknowledge the truth here. You know, around baseball, it's a lot about tradition and people just don't want to move things forward. I think you're trying to do that. I respect it. I love it. I'm here for it. But, you know, around baseball, a lot of people are like, nah, man, this is how it's got to be. I think you're being open-minded here, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, baseball. I don't expect a round robin to happen, but you can, and there are always solutions for these things. Look, we were against instant replay before it happened.
Right,
you know?
Right.
OBP being mentioned on a broadcast? What? You know? Like, it's crazy. You know, this is, that's, it's funny to me how baseball is attached to being the most boomer of all sports in this way. And, you know, it's, I guess it's what happens to me, but I will say the last 10 years, you know, the fact that CSW percentage is even mentioned is crazy to me. And like, that is how the game works now, is that we're all welcoming now of, I hate the term analytics, but really just more information. Right. And this, the barriers of that are coming down quickly. You have someone like Pitching Ninja being so huge with GIFs now, right? Like, that is modern technology infused in the game. You talk, you have everyone talking about spin rates and access and all that stuff. That's really important. And, you know, over time, every notion that we have about how the game is played changes. So I think it's a, you know, another element of the game that can change is how we do our playoffs and how we play this. I don't see a reason why over time that can't come down to.
No, I can't see it. Well, hopefully we get some baseball in 2022.
Yes, know, we're gonna have in April. I'm sorry, I should have waited for the entire sentence.
yes, I hope I'll do in April. And I just wonder, you know, I wonder, will the owners come out of here looking bad? I wonder about all that.
There's not a chance.
There's not a chance, right? I know. No, I know. There's no chance.
I mentioned before. I'm sorry. In the past, the owners were so good at controlling the narrative, the public perception. And this is, I think, honestly, the first time the owners go, wait a second, we're not winning this one?
Nope.
It's crazy. I'm in my own bubble of people that are certainly aware. But every single time I see a comment of someone defending the owners, they just get dunked on instantly. And it's amazing. Like, it's really kind of wild how much everybody knows the players are in the right this time. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why Dan Levitard is also doing that as a bit. But yeah, all I want to say is that I also hope that we get baseball soon, because I've actually gotten more into it over the last couple of years.
And it's because of pitcher list. I know. Thank you so much.
There we go.
Full circle.
There we go. Well, the other thing is, we do not want to see Nick and pitcher list out there struggling. Please check out pitcherlist.com. Go check out that site. Great site. Especially if you're into the fifth starters, which I am not. I need to get up on that.
I'll talk all day about them fifth starters. Aaron Ashby should be. He's the sixth right now.
CSW plus, like all of that stuff.
all that stuff is there. Nick, good to see you. Like I said, hopefully we have some baseball soon. Oh, yeah. And you know, people can start, you know, that traffic can be back going towards the site. That is Nick Pollock. Check out his work on Pitcher List. Nick, good seeing you. Hope we see you again soon, man.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This was so much fun. Why did it take so long for us to do this again?
I don't know, man. We got to have you more time through the baseball season, because I could start bitching about other things.
Yeah, I think it's because you hate baseball so much, Dex.
Hold on. You saw what Steve Cohen did this offseason. Dexter and I will be watching baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Are you talking about with Cohen?
Just spending a fuck ton of money to make the
team. Yeah, you needed to be precise about that.
He did good things. Like, Starling Marte is a great guest.
Oh, from a baseball standpoint. Oh, I love, Mark, you know, Mark I love Scherzer. Starling Marte. You know, yeah, I love, yeah, Starling Marte. Yeah, I love really base stealers, Nick. Remember, I love base stealers.
Yeah, man. Nick, we'll have you back on during the season. I'm sure, well, when it happens.
Well,
we'll have a lot to talk about.
Lastly, guys, congrats on 215. You know,
thank you.
It's not easy to do what you guys do for so long. So congrats to that. Very thank touched you, to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Yes. Yeah, I miss you guys.
And I wish more people recognize that, by the way.
Yeah. Appreciate you, Nick, man. Appreciate you. Thank you.
One time for your mom, one time. One time for your mom, one time.
One time for your mind. We got some interesting stuff this week. And interestingly for Brian and I, we're going to be talking about violence. One where some shit's real serious. And let's scratch that, because both of these things are serious. And I would tell you, in one mind, I might talk about some violence that I might do. And if you know me, I'm not the one who really condones the violence, but this might call for some violence. Look, and in terms of what Brian's talking about, sometimes you got to defend what's yours. Brian, what you got?
Oh, okay. So as we talked about Ukraine and Russia a little bit last time we did our One Time for Your Mind. Yep. So this is not really an update necessarily. Like, this isn't the show where you go to for that. Like, you can go find in the Thick Podcast, NPR, et cetera, that are really covering this stuff. But this is a sports show and a hip hop show. but this is also a show that discusses social issues, et cetera, et cetera. We have Ukrainian boxers, great ones, legends, Vitali Klitschko, Vladimir Klitschko, Vasily Lomachenko, who we've talked about a lot on this podcast, Oleksandr Usyk, who is the heavyweight champion, unified heavyweight champion after beating Anthony Joshua last year. They are on the front lines on this fight against Russia, defending Ukraine. They're all from Ukraine. The Klitschko brothers are retired. Lomachenko's active and Usyk is active. They just fought last year, and Usyk is supposed to have a fight coming up at some point this year to defend his title. And obviously that is on the back burner because of this, but there are multiple stories going up. I actually first heard about this, Dex. So this past weekend on Saturday, there was a fight on ESPN. It was Jose Ramirez versus, man, how am I forgetting this dude's name? Because he's Puerto Rican, but this is a bad one. Jose Pedraza, Jesus Christ. Jose Ramirez versus Jose Pedraza. Very good decision victory for Jose Ramirez, but I thought it was very close and Pedraza should have won. But anyway, Mark Kriegel, fantastic reporter that ESPN has covered boxing. Just real stories, tremendous interviews. He's actually one of my favorite reporters to follow right now. He ran a story, they ran a package that he hosted basically talking about these Ukrainian fighters fighting on the front line. So I obviously, you know, got enamored with it and wanted to look up a bunch of different things. And you're seeing some stories. Here's one on NBC News that I found in front of me, which is basically a similar story to what we've seen from other outlets, sort of repurposed, where, you know, they're talking about how these fighters just see it as their duty to fight. And they're on the front lines just, you know, doing different sort of deeds and actually out here with the gear and the guns. And the Klitschko brothers have even said, according to this report from Talk Sport, that they've already killed several Russian soldiers while fighting. Like, this is real out here. Like, they've said in one instance, this is from Talk Sport verbatim now, the two former world champions have stood firm in the nation's capital where Vitali is mayor. That's another thing. It's not even just a former boxer. It's also a mayor out here on the front lines, smoking people. Since the invasion began last week, for anyone who thought famous athletes might not get their hands dirty, 50-year-old Vitali says they have already killed Russian soldiers. Vitali told Sky News that he and Vladimir, quote, killed some people, I guess 6 people last night, close quote. Like, so fighters are out here. Oleksandr Usyk, the top of his powers, just had the biggest win of his career less than a year ago and is actually risking it all to go fight for his home. Vasily Lomachenko, still one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world, had that loss to Teofimo Lopez, bounced back with an amazing win that we saw last year, Dex, late last year. And he's somebody who is going to be in line for a title shot coming up. And he is somebody else who, like, yo, these guys from Ukraine risking it all. And look, we've talked about in America different things that people are really willing to risk, willing to fight for, whether it's actual war, whether it's activism, et cetera, et cetera. But these guys are really putting it on the line out here and having some success, which is weird to say, because obviously, like, this should not, like, we wish it wasn't happening and this wouldn't have to be the case. But I remember seeing weeks ago, Dex, that the schools were enlisting, so to speak, or going to, like, a recruiting service or however it works to sort of put their names in the hat. And that was when we were starting to really get like, oh, man, it looks like this is going to happen. It was turning more when than if. So, yeah, I wanted to bring that to people's attention that boxers are really out here doing this. And there are probably tons of other people, athletes from Ukraine that we don't know about who are also putting themselves out there. So go ahead, Dex.
Yeah, no, I mean, what I would say to that is just one, salute to those brothers defending their country. I mean, there's really not much, you know, you can say for that. I think, excuse me, when you talk about guys who are at the top of this sport doing what they do to put, let's talk about what, when you say put it all on the line, they're putting their lives on the line. You know, some of these, these guys have families, they might have, you know, wives, partners, kids, that they're going out and putting this on. And this is what this means to them to defend their country. There's a lot of talk sometimes in this country about patriotism and, you know, okay, you know, I'm patriotic, I support the, you know, support the flag that people have taken to extremes, or support the army and all the patriotism behind it. But it's fair to question how many people would really be willing to do what they are doing. And that is really fight for your country and defend your country as another country is coming to invade it, you know? And so, you know, salute to them for standing up, really standing up for what they believe in and protecting their people. Because that's what they're doing. A lot of the stuff that's going on around it, they're protecting their people. And, you know, obviously We support the people of Ukraine, and they have a right for their country not to be invaded, and they have a right to defend it. You know, I don't really want violence or want there to be war, but, you know, somebody comes at your neck, you got to do what you got to do to protect your neck. And, you know, that's what they're doing, but they're really putting it out there. These are athletes that could think about their belts they have, their legacies, anything else. They probably have some of the money where they could probably run away and hide and know they're right there on the front line. So, yeah, it's definitely worthy bringing this attention to the athletes that are in there. You know, we hope that those brothers stay safe.
And I like that when, to wrap this up, when Mark Kriegel mentioned the story, when talking about it, he specifically honed in on something that my mind automatically went to, also just having these sensibilities, that it's not even just that these are athletes doing this, they're boxers specifically. Boxers are wired differently, right? It makes a lot of sense that they're out there because they're wired in that way. Like, oh, you're coming for my stuff, I can fight you for it, right? That's just how it is. So I think that there's a certain symbolism in that as well that's interesting to me. And, you know, yeah, like Dexter said, hopefully that this gets resolved very soon. We're seeing reports about there being talks from both sides. Don't know how that's really going. This shouldn't have even gotten to this point to begin with. But, you know, hopefully that we can have a peaceful resolution to this. And I will also mention, we saw reports about Brittany Griner apparently being detained there. Now, I later read that she was detained. I don't know if it was weed or something along those lines.
They're being Russia, not Ukraine. They're being
Russia. Yes, Russia. She was being detained. And important correction. Thank you for that. Being detained 3 weeks ago, and we had just heard about it. So, like, this is getting to a point where it shouldn't get to. And the reason why she was out there, if people are curious, is because athletes, particularly in the WNBA, they have to go make their living elsewhere because they're not getting paid adequately in America, typically. Even with this new CBA. So Brittany Griner has been playing in Russia for many years, as have many other WNBA athletes, because women's basketball players do get paid well out there in some instances, especially compared to in the States. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with that either. But, you know, again, you hope that all of these situations could just play out peacefully. Now we'll see.
So for my one time for your mind, it kind of ties into a conversation I had a couple weeks ago with a friend. And I think this will be relatable to people who have kids, but also people who don't have kids. I don't think it really matters. And so if you do, but me and this friend, we were talking about if you're ever in these situations where you see somebody put your hands in your kids, particularly another child putting their hands in your kids. And I had a situation recently where I was at the park with my daughter, and I saw this child who seemed to be targeting some kids around the side that were Black kids, and he was kicking them and punching them on the sneak, like doing some sneak stuff, Brian, like a little kick here. And I saw that, and I had to let the little man know that wasn't going to go down. And I also had to let his father know that wasn't going to be going down, because you don't know where these kids be getting this stuff from or where this is coming from. You can't be having it. Yeah. So my homegirl who was talking to me about this, who has two kids, she was telling me about some situations where she had to let some kids know some things about touching her young boys. So one thing parents know, anybody knows, you don't want somebody touching your kids, which you definitely don't want happening, is another adult touching your kids, because that would be ridiculous. Except in Indiana, teacher slapped a kid. That's right. Teacher slapped a kid and was granted early retirement, Brian. Early retirement, right? And this happened in Indiana, and we got to be clear for y'all on the details, because I saw this. Somebody sent it to me, and I was like, man, this is crazy. This is crazy. All right? It's in Elkhart, Indiana, folks. A now retired high school, Indiana high school teacher, was arrested last week. This was on Thursday, after a video showed him hitting a student during a confrontation over, get this, Brian, wearing a hooded sweatshirt on school grounds, according to official. That's what caused it. Because I know people might jump to conclusions watching this, listening to this, saying like, oh, well, did the kid do something? Because you know, there's some people out there, the kid deserved to get hit. No, nobody kid deserves to get hit. Security footage was obtained by CNN. There was an incident that occurred on February 25th at Jimtown High School in Elkhart, Indiana. In the video, you see the teacher, Michael Hosinski, 61-year-old man, okay? 61-year-old man. See him jogging down the hallway, appearing to chase a student, grabs the student by the backpack. Hosinski pointed his finger at the student and then hits the student in the face. Now, the student was next to a wall, and his head hit the wall. The student then held his head with one of his hands, Helsinki grabs the student by the arm, try to pull the student down the hallway, and the student just kind of collapses and falls to the ground. And at that point, another adult appears, probably another faculty member in the video, and Helsinki walks away from the student. Okay, that all sounds bad. I watched the video. You can watch this video. It looks bad. A grown-ass man, 61 years old, smacked another student. His head hits the wall. That is obviously awful, right? Here's the thing, guys. 40 years in the game, Helsinki teaching. Was named Teacher of the Year for the school in 2020. Planned to retire this June, right? According to school board meeting minutes from January. But less than 2 hours, and this is where I got to bring Brian back on in here. Less than 2 hours after the incident occurred, he goes to the school board and says, yo, I'm out. Can you let me retire now? Hey, you know why this happened? Because he knew he was wrong.
Yeah.
He knew he shouldn't have put his hands on the kid. Mm-hmm. And he probably knew it got on video. And I got to think the school probably looked at the surveillance. I'm assuming the kid probably said this is what happened. They checked the video. They saw that it was that it happened. And here's what happened. But the school gave him early retirement. Like, this is the thing for me as a parent that annoys me. And I want to be very clear about this. Especially when your kids are in school. You're trusting that other adults around in that space are going to do the right thing. They're going to do the right thing to protect the kids. And obviously the school saw the video. They knew he was wrong too. Y'all said, yeah, we're going to give him early retirement. How was your first thing for you not to call the cops? How? You know the evidence is out there. You know there's a video. How was the first thing not to call the cops on this man for hitting this kid? Nah, I don't want to hear anything from anybody. Oh, give him a pass. He's 61. Nah, he knew better.
He laid the kid out. What does it say in the story? What did the parents do?
Ah, that's one of the parts we are going to get to, Brian. That's one of the things I want to get to because I got some parents I want to talk about. Now, the altercation, this is what triggered the confrontation. Altercation began after Helsinki, the student, confronted the student about wearing a hooded sweatshirt to class. Also, I would like to note that the dress code rule there about the hooded sweatshirt is stupid. We can just say that. It's absolutely stupid. Yes. And this is all according to Byron Sanders, who's a school superintendent, said this in a news release. Hoods are not allowed in school except on special days. Whatever. According to the school handbook, okay? From there, a verbal exchange ensued. But since he slapped the student in the face, the student's head hit the wall.
I looked up Byron Sanders' LinkedIn photo. Not what I was expecting from a Byron Sanders.
Oh, it's white Byron?
White Byron, yep.
you don't get that all the time.
Hey, dog, look.
Not what I expected either. But
you said Byron Sanders. I'm like,
in Elkhart, Indiana?
Yeah.
So, and this again, this is all the statements released that I'm reading right now. This is the school admitting. The student's head hit the wall, caused visible injuries. This is according to Sanders. Medical staff treated the student immediately, and administrators contacted the Elkhart County Sheriff's Office and Indiana Department of Child Services, according to Sanders' release. Now, we don't know if that's true. They're now saying they did the right thing, and they called the cops and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. But my thing is, okay, he did that, and y'all still granted him early retirement? Why? Why would you not let the investigation process go through? Now he's been arrested. Because people are obviously been mad, and there's some parents that have been mad. But I would also like to be clear. I also read some stuff where there were some parents, and I watched a package where there were parents defending him, saying, oh, we don't know what happened. Oh, the kid must have done something. No kid did anything for a 61-year-old man to deserve to smack him in the face and have his head hit the wall. Like, what? Here's the thing. I'm going to be clear about this. Brian, you know I'm not here for the violence. But let somebody do that to my daughter. I'll tell you what, I'm going to send them to early retirement real quick. I'll send you to early retirement. I'm going to send you to the hospital and then possibly rehabilitation center. I'm not saying I'm killing anybody. I'm not even going to go that far. But you put your hands, it's reasonable for somebody to think you put your hands on their child that they're going to want to put their hands on you.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. And I'm just saying some people may not be so kind as for you to not see these hands. I don't know how the parents of this young man is feeling right now, but I have to think they're incensed.
That's the main thing I want to find out here, right? It's just how the parents would react because you just basically told us what your parental instinct would be. I think mine would be worse. And thank goodness I don't have kids yet. You know what I mean? But, you know.
Listen, look, man. I like I said, and that's why I brought up the stuff in the beginning. I know the feeling now. I never felt it. You see somebody do something to your child that you know is wrong.
Yeah.
And that rush just comes in. Like, you got to protect. So for the parents, I'm thinking about, I got incensed seeing the video of this, seeing this child's head hit the wall. I can't imagine how those parents feel. But I think it was a bad look for this school to just say, oh, we're going to give you early retirement. Because if I saw the video and I was superintendent or principal, I would have been like, nah, man, you're going to have to talk to the cops about this.
Yeah, I would also say, like, it doesn't even need to be parents. Because imagine, like, a younger sibling, an older sibling that you're actually family, close
right.
to. Family,
right.
in general, a super close friend. A super close friend will do it. You know what I mean? Et cetera, et cetera. Like, yeah, my main thing is just the parents. And then also just the sending dude into early retirement. Like, I'm just tired of people just getting away with shit. And that's all it really is. It's somebody that's like, all right, instead of actually disciplining you, whether it's jail time, whether it's whatever,
right.
it's, all right, we're just sending you into retirement early. He did himself a favor. Like, okay, now he
right.
has like a
right.
now he has like a stain on his record. He don't care. He's retired. Like, what's the big deal?
He did. So, he like, and the man knew he was wrong. Less than 2 hours, he was like, yo, give me this early retirement. That's he knew he was wrong.
Yeah, like, and then over a hoodie allegedly, which
right, like what is
in Indiana? Like, unfortunately, doesn't surprise me, and I'm actually like I'm just under a rock or whatever. But this is the first I'm hearing about this, and I haven't seen it being widely reported on. Maybe I need to sort of look through my timeline and actually do some.
I think it's no, I saw.
Think it's underreported?
No, I saw. I think it's starting to make its grounds today across social media because I was sent this. By someone, and then it was like maybe after I actually put it down in the rundown that I was going to talk about this for One Time for Your Mind, I then saw a couple other people post it on social media talking about who didn't have kids, talking about if they had kids, they'd be incensed and they'd want to throw hands. It's an understandable emotion, I think, as you said also too, for anybody that would be a loved one or you care about, that you, especially when you see that age disparity, 61 and a middle school student getting slapped in the head and then his head hitting the wall. And clearly dropping. That's the thing. The kid drops down and there's like no concern or remorse in the video for his well-being. No shock.
Yeah.
You don't like, listen, it makes you also think about who's around your kids and that's why we need better background checks. And who knows what this guy's done over his 40-year career. I have no idea. Either way, I'm saying if somebody wants to put hands on that man, I don't have a problem with it. And that man should do some jail time. That's all I'm saying. He's been arrested now. I hope that he gets the appropriate punishment and not a slap on the wrist. Now he's been arrested, but let's hope it's not a slap on the wrist. But, you know, sometimes violence can't be necessary. I know you guys expect to hear that from Brian and not me, but sometimes it can't be necessary. Yeah. That is it for this episode of the A-Hartel Podcast, episode 215. Big thank you to our guest, Nick Pollack.
Yes.
Great discussion with him about the MLB lockout. We hopefully get to see some baseball soon. We also encourage everybody to continue to keep supporting us in the ways you do. Also, check out our partnership with Prize Pick. Check out with that promo code BACKPACK. It will match your first deposit up to $100. Continue to do us. You know where to follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, at AHTT Podcast. Keep hitting us up with that support via Patreon, which we appreciate so much. For Brian Fonseca, I'm Dexter Henry. Until next time, y'all. Peace. Yo, don't be hitting them kids, man. Don't do that.